Podcast 232. Listener Questions with Ben Lawson, Part 2. Sponsored by Ben Lawson from Cross Bull Ranch.
All right, there we go. Number 7, Wheaton's World. Have you considered packaging your unique permaculture vocabulary into a cartoon world and doing voice acting or creating a Beekman's World type science show? Is it possible to find entertainment industry permies via the Empire to help brainstorm on a mainstream educational marketing campaign like this?
Oh, wow. As I watched Beekman's World as an adult, and so I enjoyed that show a lot. What was the name of the guy in the rat suit? Do you remember?
I can't remember, but I totally have a visual. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't remember what that guy's name was, but he's just crazy about being in the rat suit, I guess. But I had a great. I really enjoyed Beekman's. I can totally do Beekman's World. We want to do like a Beekman's World, but it's like something with the stuff that I do. That would be fun. That would be great. And I Beekman had some sort of Brooklyn accent or something. And I don't have an accent like that, but that would be just gobs of fun. And then I could see trying to describe a rocket mass heater, you know, using that kind of wacky format. That'd be a hoot. Doing voiceover for animation, I've never done it, but I could try. I can't do animation. Actually, I can. I've done some animation. At my bigger website, coderanch.com, we have a moose that's like for the forums.
All right.
And I added a little fly that buzzes around the moose's head and flies up his nose. that's like the primary icon when you go to the site. That's the logo is the moose's head that has only one eye mounted on the wall, and there's a fly buzzing around his head and flies up his nose. That animation, I made that.
Is that a GIF or a Flash movie or what was it?
Yep, it's just a GIF. All right. I made it in 1999 or 2000, somewhere around there. It was a long, long time ago, and it's still going.
Still going.
There, it's 4 million people per month are subjected to looking at a fly going up a moose's nose. But you know, here's a funny little thing: is that Bill Nye, the Science Guy, got his start on Beekman's World, so. In Beekman's World, every once in a while, Beekman would talk about, a science experiment, and then they would cut to this guy in a lab coat that would do it, and that was Bill Nye. And that's where he got started. And then here's another interesting little bit of trivia. When I was working on a software development project years and years ago, the building that I worked in was the old Nye Laboratories. So, like, we'd have a meeting in this room, and it's like, This is the room where all those lab shots were in. And it's like, cool. So cool. So, anyway, a little trivia for you. A little trivia. But here's yet another one. The BBC contacted me last spring, I think it was. And they said that they wanted to have a series that they would make that would be me buying my land, and then we're all going to move on to it and do the off-grid thing and build structures and, you know, do the permaculture thing and stuff like that. And they insisted on doing video interviews with me and the people that would be moving on to the land. And so they did. They were doing all these video interviews with all these different people. And then suddenly it went quiet. They said something like, all the people that were assigned to this project got pulled off and put onto this other project, and they're going to come back to us later. And we never heard from them again. So you're thinking like a TV show along these lines, then yeah, something like, you know, but their idea I think was like they wanted a reality show. And I kind of thought to myself, like, what they want is they want to see people being angry at each other.
Right.
Kind of feeling like, everybody who's coming onto the land thinks I am awesome. So I'm having a hard time seeing where we're going to have a lot of conflict. And so then I don't think it'd be of much interest to them. Whereas on the other hand, something that's like more of a Beekman's World format, that makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's a demographic that's not being really targeted, especially like youth sort of environmental and science education stuff. You know, you just have a funny buzzer sound every time you use, you know, four-letter word, and it flies on the Cartoon Network or Discovery Channel or something like that. But but I think, yeah, I mean, this kind of goes back to that blue sky budget thing. It's like, let's just say the gods and goddesses of Hollywood came to you and said, you know, let's do the PR thing with the blue sky budget, and let's get you as a cameo character on SpongeBob, and you know, on there's the Sprout Network. There are avenues to, instead of like starting from scratch on a whole new production where you're going to like sign away, you know, your firstborn to the producer and all that kind of stuff. Like, and so that's just going that direction of like, what does it take? And this is something I'm very interested in, is like, what does it take to get Paul Wheaton's demo reel and portfolio, like e-press kit together so that it can be pitched to all these producers with an expected return rate of 1 out of 100 responses to an introductory email. You know, I actually did that for a CEO of a national recycling company, and just kind of have that experience drilled into my nervous system of like, yeah, you're basically like just marketing somebody's materials, getting it out there and seeing what kind of pieces of spaghetti stick to the wall. And I really feel like to accelerate the brain infection rate of permaculture is going to require that the entertaining educators such as yourself are the ones that are that the less entertaining nerds and geeks like myself and a lot of the other permies out there are supporting and propping up the entertainers to get to that higher level of culture to do the wider scale dissemination, and the barriers to entry are all open, and there's so much opportunity there. So just food for thought, and something I think anybody out there who you know knows, has experience with this kind of stuff, or has the ability to connect you in those ways, that's a huge gift that you have, that is like I think underappreciated. And especially the most valuable thing, in my humble opinion, that your creative capital is specifically the schematic of the world that is put in, taking very advanced scientific and ecological concepts and breaking them down into like totally digestible, comprehensible, fun and engaging, like cartoon sort of and comic book and graphic novel type vocabulary. All of the different, like from the poopy bits to the toxic geek to the Department of Making You Sad. Every time you say those, and I've listened to all the podcasts, I'm like creating that SpongeBob reality, alternate parallel reality in my mind, and I'm interacting with it myself, and I'm sure everyone else that listens is. So, you know, I think it would be fabulous to for there to be some sort of hard and soft media out there, something, you know, comic books that are gonna, you know, I, again, another thing is that, you know, it's good to back up and have redundancy in our media and our the media types. So if there was a comic book of a Wheaton's World sort of experience where it's not necessarily that super hard to figure out long in-depth fiction book storyline, but like just little adventures that don't have to be interconnected other than just fitting within the world that you created, but every different little, you know, Scooby-Doo type adventure of like encountering, you know, sidestepping the bad guys and creating the positive answer that didn't require going toe-to-toe with the bad guys and, you know, all that adventure, I think, yeah, you know, you as a cameo voice actor on existing cartoons, the potential of you having a Beakman's World type thing where you're on your new land, and then having, you know, graphic novels, you know, that are just one-off little scenarios that are just brain farts that somebody sits there and illustrates and takes from the dictionary and the glossary of Wheaton's, you know, world vocabulary, is just plugs in all these different archetypes, and then you have that world just like ready to go.
Well, so now you've said, like, I've got like 15 different things to say, and I can't remember all of them, but one of them is that the moment that you say make a demo reel, I'm not quite sure what that is, and I'm not sure how to make one that is good, and basically my innards start to say it sounds like work, and so I think it would be maybe if there was a thread set up in the tinkering forum at Permies, maybe those that are savvy about this can somehow cobble together pieces out of whatever I've already put together. And I appreciate that you think that that would be a fun show. I'm flattered. That sounds good. I like the idea. Of course, I think who isn't wandering around and doesn't like the message of somebody saying, "Hey, there ought to be a television show about you, man." And I think and then you said like a comic book, and it's kind of like I've never been much of a reader of comic books. I've hardly ever read any, but when you talk about a cartoon, an animated series, then I kind of think, wow, I wonder what Ben Edlund is working on now, the creator of The Tick, or what about the guy that the guy that did Invader Zim. You know, that would be fun, but I have no idea how to connect with these people or how to suggest it, or and I kind of feel like right now I have 1,500 projects that I would like to work on today. And on any given day, I cannot make progress on more than 20 projects. And it's kind of like, so, you know, if you take this project and add it to the pile, I can't help but think it's going to be far enough down on the list that I'll probably never get to it. And most of it is because there's just way too many things that I don't know how to fiddle with. And at the moment, it's kind of like... The big stuff is like land search and how do I infect more brains but yes, along the lines, if something existed like a television show, then yes, that would be a way of infecting more brains. And so that was when the BBC was talking to me, that was one of the things I was thinking, like, you know, I could leverage that into getting on to shows and making appearances and being able to get more people to learn about all of these things, like rocket mass heaters and Wafati and curing cancer through good nutrition, and how food can be much better than what people currently think is good food, all of these things, but. It requires something that I don't think that I have, some kind of knowledge set, some kind of connection, some sort of network, some sort of I don't know what. Well, and I'm baffled.
Well, if you think about successful, like modeling successful people in the entertainment industry, it's like you have to. I mean, if it was your passion to be in front of, you know, to, like, if you were one of the people like Brad Pitt who moved to Hollywood with $300 and danced around on the side of the street as the El Pollo Loco chicken, and the pathway was always like to take the talent to the entertainment industry and get gigs doing that. If that was your passion, you'd already be there.
Yeah.
Your passion is to do the hands-on and build the scientific database and the field work. And I kind of feel like what'll happen is that you will, as you succeed and continue to do what you're doing, that the cameras will start to come to you, like the BBC. And the question is just getting to that tipping point where there's a lot of offers and you're picking and choosing and you're having a lot of like discretion in what kind of work you do. And but yeah, I don't think like by me bringing this up, you know, in these questions, it's more just to kind of seed the universe with this idea, like how many people out there who enjoy your work would really like to see like you at the highest level of culture in a position of the position that Beekman had of influence. And if just sparking up that imagination, it just kind of jostles things around. And I think that, when that opportunity, to work with that level of influence, I think you're guaranteed it at some point in the near future. And I can't say exactly how. I don't know what the pathway will be and what the team that will have to be assembled to help manage that in a way that does not distract you from what you are already doing. And the cool thing is that if you keep on moving like an arrow, doing exactly what you've already planned to do, you know, this apparatus of production can work around you and not get in your way. Like that would be the ideal, is that for nothing to get in your way, but for it to feed back into the matrix through just the media industry picking it up. And I think, like I said, I don't know. If I had that money, if I had the blue sky budget for myself, the first thing I would do would be to wrap that apparatus around the work you're doing, because it is, you know, I say this from the heart, the work that Jack Spirko is doing and the work that you're doing is the most important work that I'm aware of in North America. So hopefully, this will unfold in a way that gets you up there for the broad scale influence, because I can't think of a better way. You know, children can eat it up, adults can eat it up, teenagers can eat it up, and it's all because of the way that you've been able to scale down the complexity of the world we live in. It's got all of these nasties in it, and all of these, you know, solutions and opportunities for really creating a beautiful world and healing ourselves in the process. Like, you know, I'm just I'm a big advocate, and I'm I'm rooting for you, man.
Wow. Well, it's great to make the top two list. I'm powerfully curious about what the work that Mark Shepard is up to and seeing that, and maybe there'll be a top three list. But I think that there's a lot of people in North America that are doing a lot of interesting things. And frankly, I feel great pain in that I don't currently have land and that I'm not able to demonstrate the things that I advocate. As far as like, yeah, adding more work versus, you know, it's like having a bunch of cameras around, I kind of imagine like with the BBC folks that they might come by every 2 to 6 weeks and, you know, like, oh, we're going to be here for a day or two and video stuff, and that's going to be making up shows. And then they're gone. And so then we can get our work done. But it's kind of like, I know that like when I show up to Brian Kirkbilliatt's place with my video camera, then he pretty much flushes the whole day in order that I can take a bunch of video. And so he loses an entire day of work, but I only go out there like once a year. And it seems like, and he believes as I do, that it's like getting this information out is crazy important. So for him, the day is, the sacrificed day is worth it. You know, he doesn't get any extra money from it or anything like that. You know, it's not like, I would like to think that a bunch of people are like, hey, Brian, I will give you $100 if you give me a tour of your place. Or hey, Brian, I want to sign up for a workshop that you're teaching that I would have never have known about except for you were in those videos or something like that. I don't think he's seeing any change in his income model based on being in my videos, which is unfortunate. I wish that he did. So on the other hand, it kind of seems to me like with the BBC thing, they never said anything exactly, but somehow I just kind of had this feeling that you know, they would help with some things in some ways, whether it's by giving, you know, forking over some money, or whether it's like, you know, we want to see you do this project and you can't afford the equipment yet, so we've decided to rent the equipment for you. You know, things like that. That's kind of what I imagine. Plus, the big thing is that it's like, if they're videoing what we're doing and getting that information out there, that kind of solves a lot of my problems. Although I got to admit that when I've seen some of the shows in the past, like, I remember PBS did a series of, like, here's people who've moved to Montana back in 1890 and what it was like. It seems like their focus was on how people were angry and not so much on, like, what exactly did they do. They had a little bit of, like, here they are putting logs on a log cabin to build a log cabin. But then it's like, you know, very little information on how to. And I kind of feel like that's the important part, is to convey to people how to get this done, how to do this.
Did you see there was a show called, I think it was Manic Organic, and it was this really kind of zany character. He was in Canada, and he was an organic farmer, and it was like really kind of it was not all about selling the drama of all the psychology buckets of crazy that you have in a, you know, an intern habitat or whatever, you know. It was actually like, yeah, here's how I do this, and it was very much marketed to and designed for the people who want to be doing this stuff, you know, and that it's a smaller sector of society, the people who actually are like, how do I do this because I'm doing it and I want to learn more, versus the people who want to see Jerry Springer on a farm, you know, Jerry Springer meets goes rural, you know, and have all of that social drama happening. But I think there's got to be, like I said, it's just like, you know, the more exposure you have to the people that are creating these productions, the more, you know, discretion you have to be like, yeah, I don't like your angle and I don't like your producer, so I'm going to go with these people that are like actually doing this to serve the market of people who want to grow food, and it's going to be all about that. So, yeah, I think it'll be a better world when your door, your phone's ringing off the hook for different types of ways to interact and get some of that Paul Wheaton action out there to more people.
So I haven't seen the show that you suggested or that you mentioned, I agree that it's like, I can't help but think that there'd be like stuff where it's like, oh, I want there to be more of this, but it's like, if somebody's going to be in charge to make the show happen, I mean, there's so much that must be involved in that I have no clue about, that it kind of seems like you kind of get what you get, and that's all that you get. And I think it's also important that, you know, I need to make it clear that I don't, you know, when you start comparing my knowledge set to Jeff Lawton and Sepp Holzer, and it's kind of like, I had that farm with 80 acres, and there was a lot of stuff that I did, and then I've visited a lot of farms and gardens, and I've done, you know, some things, but I kind of feel like I'm a little surprised that there's much interest in my stuff, because it's like, I feel like I've been out of the loop for so long for hands-on experience, and most of what I've been doing is going and visiting people. But at the same time, yeah, I kind of feel like, in fact, I'm kind of amazed at Joel Salatin. I mean, that guy is writing books, and he's getting out and doing a lot of speaking, and he's still managing his farm. And it just seems like, how does this guy do all of this? Because I remember when I had my 80 acres and I was doing it, it's like all of my internet stuff was on hold. I'm not putting out any new content, and so I still worry about that. Hopefully, with Adrian's help, with what Adrian's been doing, that all of the online stuff will continue. Even when I have land, but if I had $20 million, and it was, somebody said, here's $20 million, put on a show, I have to admit, I don't know who to hire. I don't know, like, what would be the format of the show. There's so much I don't know. And plus, on top of that, I don't feel a passion of, like, I put together my YouTube videos. But with each video, most of the videos start off with, you know, somebody saying that this is a fact when my position is the opposite. And they won't listen to me. And so then it's like, but I have video footage proving my point that I'm right. And so it's like suddenly I have to put the video out, because it's like with the whole Hugel culture thing, when I put that out, it was like I had I don't know how many people telling me that it's not true. It's not true that you can plant something and not irrigate it, and then it will survive. These typical standard garden plants. It's not true. All these plants need to have irrigation. And it's like, so now I've got the video footage that proves it's true. And so then I had to put that video out. I had to, and it was bizarre. It's like this deluge of people telling me I'm full of shit, I don't know what I'm talking about, and I'm a moron, and I just make this shit up and claim it to be true. And it's you know, lies. They're calling me a liar. And it's like, all right, I've been putting all my time into all these other projects, and it's time for me to put those aside, and I gotta put the Hugel culture video out right now. And so then, boom, now you got the Hugel culture video. Now you have video proof. This stuff was planted. It was never irrigated. It's the fall. Look at all the food. You know? And it's proof. And I kind of feel like I had two other videos previously that were proof, but apparently that didn't work. So, you know, it wasn't sufficient. And so I had the one with Mark Vandermeer and standing in front of his stuff, showing all that green life, that green lushness, hasn't been irrigated. Nope, that's not proof. Had one where it was a video of people staying around what looked like a dirt mound with a ton of tomatoes popping out of it in September that had not been irrigated. No, that's not proof. And it's kind of like, wow, it's so bizarre. So now I kind of feel like at least that issue has been put to rest. Now there's a bunch of other things that keep coming up, and I've got the video footage to prove it. But people won't believe me until I put the video up. And so rather than like making a show that's entertaining where people like, I don't know, it's like got a script maybe or something. And it's got video angles and effects, and it looks sharp and nice. These are all things that are like, but I guess I don't care very much about. I don't think of those things. And those are, there's going to be people that are actual artisans in videography that will be able to do that. And I guess, they would have to be in charge, not me. I can help. You know, but I can't put something like that together.
Right. Yeah. I don't think you would need to. In fact, I think that, you know, if you continue to crank out videos, whatever, just continue to crank out videos in mass, and that seems to be effective at eventually turning more heads and getting considered to be, you know, for one, I mean, you could be invited to be an expert. Appearance in other types of shows where they're, you know, whatever, Mythbusters or, you know, stuff like that. Like you said, it would be great to do, some of the rocket stove technology stuff and have it go through those, you know, types of shows and whatnot.
So, you know, that would be cool to go and do an episode of Mythbusters. Mm-hmm. Because we started off with Mythbusters and that light bulb thing.
Right.
And it's like I wanted more data, so I started my own little experiment and learned, you know, much richer information. But I think that it's like there's a ton of things that a lot of this stuff is kind of like, a lot of stuff that I do is like Mythbusters. Like the whole thing of like, does a rocket mass heater heat your home with 10 times less wood than a 75% efficient wood stove. And so it's kind of like, you know, and then the other thing is like, does the fire actually burn sideways? You know, but I think that, you know, all of these things that are doubts, you know, like, can you, like the hookah culture, can you grow food without irrigation? And I think that, so these things are being proven. And I like the thing that they had about on the Mythbusters that for their light bulb stuff, it started off with the idea of like, people say that you should leave the light on, like when it's a fluorescent light, you should leave the light on because the amount of power it takes to start up is so much. And so then they basically busted that myth. So I think that there's gobs of things that would be fun to do with Mythbusters. And anyway, that would be a fun one. I've always kind of liked the idea of being on The Daily Show, because you know they always have a little segment at the end where they interview somebody, and a lot of it's about economics or they're a politician. Sometimes they're a movie star, and so I don't think I've seen anybody that's been anything close to like what I do, and I don't know what they would interview me about, but like usually you've got to like, oh, it's a movie star and they have a new movie coming out. So that's why they do that, or it's somebody that has written a book and they got their new book coming out, or it's
right.
I don't know, they're running for office for something or another, and so they're going to talk about politics, and it is a political show, but I kind of, you know, feel like the other thing is I really don't watch hardly any television, so I really don't know. I don't really know what all is the stuff that people watch. And I, on the rare occasion where it's like, oh, it's late, but I'm going to go to bed soon, but maybe in, you know, 20 minutes, I can go onto the internet and I can watch an episode of The Daily Show. 20 minutes. That's all it takes. So that's one of the few that I know of.
Well, yeah, there's so many different ways to get plugged in, and you never know. There's also this thing called help. What is it called? Help a reporter out, and it's like a kind of like a almost like a listserv kind of thing, where reporters doing all kinds of different stories like post a that they need an expert in some field, and like you can set, you know, filter it and scan through it, and just random stuff comes up. I mean, it's just so, the people that are good at this, like the publicists and the PR people and the talent agencies and stuff, when they it's like when they know what your stick is and it's their job, and then, you know, of course that's another level. You're not gonna just shell out cash. Although if you did have the blue sky budget, you would want to find somebody who had experience representing sustainability, green, you know, people, because there's all those green shows, and you know, there's all those green techno. A friend of mine actually did a show called Green Gadgets, and it was like she's like a high level infomercial and like just sort of voice personality and all that kind of stuff, and she did a Green Gadget show. So I mean, I think that, you know, to go somewhere with all these things would be, like you said, create a forum thread, and maybe it's like the best of Paul's material. Let's make a list of that material, and then figure out a way to make it into a zip file or you know, just whatever, to be able to point people to this stuff. Because I think that would be just, you know, again, nothing to put on your plate, but something for people to for you to leverage your fans. You know, I mean, I am a Paul Wheaton fanboy. Proud to say it. So other people out there that would want to form some kind of volunteer working group to get this stuff figured out, and then it's like, who, you know, anybody who does say, hey, I could think of a way to plug this guy on this project, and then it's like an email is sent with your bio and your, you know, a video demo reel, which could just be hacked up from a bunch of the videos you've already done, the best of parts, and you, you know, sign off on it. And there's like one you know, video that's not, you know, less than, it's like less than 5 minutes, and it's just like, it doesn't have to be really sequential. It can just be, you know, exciting stuff from the, you know, the video archives, and just something to pitch out to people and, you know that this guy exists and he's available by phone, by Skype, you know, by, you know, if you want to fly out or fly him out, or, you know, whatever, send them lines. It's all doable. And that's that, as long as you're sort of somehow engaged into that, into feeding back into that, into the matrix and the you know, the media, the higher level media stuff, you never know.
Well, all right, so a couple of quick things. I mean, one is that the demo reel thing is still one that I'm not sure what to put together. But if somebody starts a thread, maybe there's somebody that has skills in that space and they can put something together for me or whatever, or might be able to say what we need. But I can tell you that, I think the closest thing I may have done is when I did the video that was for the Kickstarter for the CFL video, because that's kind of like got, you know, a dozen little video clips from a bunch of my YouTube videos. So there's that. The other thing is, you mentioned help a reporter out, and Kane Jameson contacted me, I think he sent me an email, and he says there's a reporter that wants to interview somebody about thus and so. Is it okay if I send them your information? And I said sure. So anyway, he had subscribed to the help a reporter out thing. It's a free thing, and they send you 3 emails a day. Well, anyway, he sent me that. The reporter contacted me, and I answered some questions, and sure enough, it went out, and it brought traffic, and it was a good thing, and it was fine. And I thought, wow, that was neat. It took like 5 minutes of my life, and the impact was large. I infected a lot of brains. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And so I signed up for Help a Reporter Out. And 3 times a day, I would get these massive emails. And when the emails would arrive, because it's like, these reporters want answers, like, right now. Yeah. They're like, writing this at this moment. And so I would try to pick at least one of these each time, 3 times a day, and then say, send information. And, like, you know, for 3 months, I did that, 3 times a day. And got nothing. I got interviewed like 6 times and it never came out. And so I stopped doing it. And so I again, it's one of those things where obviously there's something to it that I don't understand. So
in a word, an intern or a staff, you know, someone who, an office monkey that would be keeping all this stuff away from getting in front of you and slowing you down.
And it's like, I do feel, I mean, as much as it sickens me to not currently have land and to be proving the things that I'm doing, and I do feel like I'm finding a lot of proof in a lot of places, and I'm getting the proof out there, but there's a lot of things that I don't know of anybody that's doing it, like Wafadi. I don't know of anybody that's doing it, and I need to prove it. I mean, that's an important thing. I need to prove it. So I need the land. So as much as I need to do that, I am powerfully compelled to infect more brains. Mm-hmm. And so it's like it seems to be my number one drive. How do I have more people learn about rocket mass heaters? How do I have more people learn about that 87% article where they can you know, cut 87% off of their electric heat bill? I just need more people to be aware of that, and I need to get the message across. So it's like I've already composed the message, and it's like, how do I get this into more brains? This has been it's been bizarre how I'm powerfully compelled in that space, and the whole help a reporter out thing did seem like an avenue, and I had to do that. But then it after being rejected 100 times, and it's kind of like, or nothing came of it after 100 efforts or 100 attempts. It's like, yeah, this was. So then you're saying, yes, get an intern or something like that. Well, currently Adrian's been doing great work, and when you're talking about like having other people and coordinating and stuff, I'm now turning that over to Adrian, because my history is that for every 100 hours I spend trying to help people that are trying to help me, then I usually get, like, you know,
right. 70
hours back. And it's like, it would have, my time would have been better spent not, you know, accepting the help of others. It's right. Like, if I just, oh, I'm going to do this on my own, man, you all go away. Then I would have been ahead, on average overall. But Adrian is now taking that on. So then when people write to me and they say, I want to help you, what can I do to help? Then I just forward that to Adrian. And Adrian's got a list of things that he's currently, like, handing off to people. Here, do this. And then they don't ever do it, and then we don't ever hear from them again.
There you go.
Yeah. And I have to admit, you know, he's starting off with some stuff that's really dull. But you know what? 90% of the work I do is really dull. It's like, you know, there's a reason why people aren't currently going out and doing exactly what I'm doing. And it's because it's so damn boring. And it's like, who wants to go and find another 20,000 brains to infect today? Nobody. It's boring. And they'd rather go out and actually do it. Do the thing, like turn the soil. And I'm prevented from that because I don't currently have land. I kind of, you know, I do actually worry if God wants me to not have land right now. You know? It's like this whole, I almost closed on land, and I'm still so angry about it. This guy kept changing the terms, and it's like I got, and it's like 3 months of my life were pissed away with this guy, and in the end, it just all fell apart. And it's like really, you know, it just goes. It seems like it shouldn't be that hard to buy a piece of land. So I keep moving forward. This question starts off as Wheaton's World. You want me to do a Beacon's World, but with my own stuff? Yes, that would be good. And there's, it's so complicated. And I don't know what to do. And sometimes I have to wonder, would I really be a good television person or whatever it is they want to do. I think I'd be a good guest. I think that the response rate when I was on Jack's show, on Jack Spirko's show, my impression was the response rate was amazing. I saw an enormous spike in traffic, and I saw, and it looked like the feedback was, a lot of people were like, that was the best show ever. And I think it was like his podcast number 600 or so. So I felt like it was good.
I was there. Yeah.
So, but you know, at the same time, I know I'm not everybody's cup of tea, and so there are a lot of people that think I'm horribly offensive, and
well, that sells though. That's the good part. You know, you're on the right track.
I think that I like to think of it as there are people that like me and people that don't like me, and the people that don't like me can go and listen to Justin Bieber, Chris Hilton. And the people who do like me will listen. And I like providing the content, and then the people that like me can consume the stuff that I provide, and the people that I don't will go at something else. And then at the same time, I do try to put out content like my Hugo Culture article, my Rocket Mass Heater article. I try to make those have a broad appeal. Like, you know, but my podcasts are like, I've got such a long list of reasons to not make a podcast that if somebody came along and said, I'll give you big gobs of money if you'll make a podcast, but you can only make them my way, I'm not interested. I'm going to have to pass. It's like already the podcasts are already like on thin ice.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like I make them because I make them my way. I don't know. If you know, right now Adrian's doing a lot of stuff to help massage them into production, and there's so much that always seems to go wrong with the podcasts, like technical difficulties. In the last year, there's just been way too much headache around the podcasts, and so it's like, ugh.
Well, if you
there have been times when it's like for 6 weeks we didn't make any podcasts because there were technical difficulties. Why make one? How's it going to go up? We can't get the ones we have now to go up.
Well, have you considered doing, I don't know if I, maybe I missed this, but is there a membership opportunity or offer for, I mean, that's what Jack's done, is created the Member Support Brigade, and that's like making money in his sleep, leveraging sales and discounts and value add stuff and premium content that he makes, premium videos and whatnot. And I mean, because the thing is, if you're doing podcasts without a revenue model built into it, it's kind of like, yeah, hey, it's infecting brains, but maybe not as rapidly as other endeavors you could be doing. And if it's not immediately feeding back into revenue, then you're just kind of putting them out there into the abyss. And then there's people like me who are like out there. I feel like I'm so busy, I don't have time to barely sit down and participate in the forum or read anything in text. Like, I'm just juicing text by listening to podcasts and being out there working with my hands. And so I see great value in it, and I would pay what I pay Jack for my membership, you know, as a kickback to the podcast being available. And maybe that's something you could propose and set up on the back end, you know, on the website is a membership that you know, for forum members. I mean, I assume you've got ways to donate and all that kind of stuff, but some sort of value add paid membership where that's like, you know, not a huge a huge chunk out of people's paycheck, but a way to give back, and then with enough support from that, then it could make it actually, you know, when you sit down and do a podcast, it's going to pay for, you know, itself and more.
So I, not only has Jack like totally beaten me up on this in this space, like, so like I've had two or three phone calls with Jack, you know, off podcast, where he's like, why don't you do what I do? I don't understand why you don't do it the way that I do it. And so we've had those conversations. But I've had probably at least 80 people say exactly what you've just said. Why don't you do what Jack does? and it's like, okay, well, boy, have we ever tried. And it's like, and it's one of those things where like one person said, okay, I'll set this up for you. I'll put it up on your blog software. You have to pay $80 for this software that'll make it happen. And it's like, okay, I paid the $80. And then they never got it installed. And then then a guy comes along and says, I'll do this for you. And if you want to do that, I was like, okay, I'll do that. And then it doesn't happen. So we have like 6 hours of conversation to make it happen, but then it never happens. And so currently it's like, okay, we got the thing going on Scubly, and we've made all kinds of links to it. And then like with Art Ludwig's podcasts, those were set aside, and they were only available for sale on Scubly. And I think it was like in the end something like 70 people bought those. And then we also made all the other older podcasts available, so that the only way that you can get them, well, so we made them available as like quick download packages for $4.50 per packet. After doing all of this for like, I don't know, 4 months, 5 months or something like that, a total of 94 people had actually gone to Scubly and bought something. And it's like, that's not enough money to do anything with. And it's kind of like the total income from it was like not that much. And at the same time, somehow I'm like going through all the money that I paid for this and paid for that for the podcasts, and it's like I've spent $6,000 putting out these podcasts, and that's to put them out like, you know, on the cheap, and it's like, you know, the total income for all the podcasts added up to like a few $100, and the total that I've laid out is $6,000. And then I get people that are like, when are you going to put out another podcast? And then I look up their email address, and they've never bought a fucking thing. And it's kind of like, I just kind of started getting this icky feeling, you know, and granted, I got it. You know, the number one thing that I think of as paying, well, not the number one, maybe one or two, But one of them is like when I go and I find a thread, somebody says, oh, you got to go look at this thread because somebody's being a dick. And so I go out to that thread to try and make things better. And it's like somebody asks a question, and then the first answer is like somebody who's clearly a pod person that says, in one of the podcasts, Paul said this. And it's like, that's right. That's the right answer for this guy's question. And it's like, that is gold. Suddenly it's like, this whole podcast thing's been worth it. Because this guy, it's like, now all of these people's questions are being answered, and it's a good answer because of the podcast. And it's like, oh, that's a breath. That's like, that feels so good to see that. And the other one is that I'll wander off someplace for whatever reason, and I'll be in the middle of nowhere, some forums I've never been to before. And then there's a topic that's like a topic that's of interest to me. And they'll be having a conversation, and then somebody will say, yeah, you should listen to this podcast that Paul Wheaton did, and here's a link to it. Yes! Yes! That is awesome! Now, it's like, you know, again, worth it! Worth it! I'm infecting brains without even working at it!
Right.
You know? And so then, those have been things that have made it worth it. Those are worth more than money to me. Because I'm so powerfully compelled to infect brains, and then it's like by making the podcast, then brains are getting reinfected and reinfected. It's going farther. So that's kind of. Hey, I could be wrong, but I think you have a dog at your house.
A couple of them, yeah. It's either a coyote or an ambulance that they're tripping on.
Okay. All right. Yes, money is part of it. I mean, that's another thing too, is that it's kind of like if people throw in money and they've like, I don't know, when I put out a podcast and if somehow they go to Scubly and they download it or something, then it's kind of like it turns out to be worth it. It turns out to be like, okay, then it's like people are throwing money. Because for the longest time, it kind of really made me angry that I'll go to all this trouble and I feel like I've conveyed information that's currently not available anywhere on the internet. And it took a lot of work to get it there and a lot of expense and a lot of headache. And then the pizza guy shows up and he's getting paid to deliver the pizza to you, but you throw him $3. And it's like, anybody could have delivered that pizza. Anybody. But you give them a tip of $3. But I didn't get a tip of $3 for that podcast. And so it was like this thing where I would put out a new podcast, and I would see, like, I would send out the emails, and I would put the thing out on Twitter and put it up on Facebook. And on Twitter, there would be 0 retweets. And on Facebook, there'd be like 3 likes and 1 share, and then the numbers on the podcast would be the same numbers as every other podcast. So it's like it's really not going anywhere further. So it's kind of like people are consuming the podcast and then moving on. After they're done listening to the podcast, they'll go listen to one of Jack's podcasts and maybe some other podcasts, and then that's it. That's the end. And so it's kind of like, you know what? If they've already listened to all of my podcasts and they're not, and it's not going any further, I'm just preaching to the same choir. And so I'm having a hard time being motivated about that. All right. I'm sorry. I think I've wandered off into the weeds. I'm not sure if I think I'm just whining about stuff.
No, this is good. It's good to know the woes and to understand, you know, where everything is at. And I totally see that. I think you came up with some great ideas to get people. Hey, if you want to put your money where your mouth is and have more podcasts, by all means. And that's the way to do it. It's a lot of people, they call them pod faders. You know, they start something and then they get pissy because people don't you know, that doesn't blow up overnight, and so they just quit. But you maybe, you know, it's worth mentioning the in the forum that you know, the post where there's a number of opportunities if you're interested to get Paul on the mic again. So
We've got some new things that might be coming out soon. So some of the Code Ranch developers are adding in some functionality so that we might be able to do some things like the way Jack does things. We'll see how it pans out. But it isn't even exactly about the money. It's really about infecting more brains. And granted, you know, I need to get money because I need to pay for the land. And the whole reason why this whole land deal didn't work out is because when you buy big acreage, banks won't touch it. And so then the only way, and I don't have enough money to buy an entire, like this piece of land, I don't have enough to buy the whole thing outright. And so then it has to be owner financed. And then the guy that was selling it, he kept wanting to change the terms. But it's like, dude, we already agreed to terms. All I have to do is, like, you know, make those terms stick on the piece of paper. You've already even put it up. It's already on the piece of paper. All you got to do is stop changing the piece of paper. You know, when we get to closing, it just has to say what's on the piece of paper, and we'll be fine. Anyway, but so I've got to, so part of me is kind of like, I got to come up with enough money in order to be able to buy land outright or whatever. And, but it's like, with the podcasts, shelling out $6,000 and getting $400 back.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, that's going the wrong way. And then people are like, here, I bought your stuff for $250, so now you can buy land. Yeah, $2.50, that's like making really no difference. So it's kind of like, all right, what do I do to come up with an extra $500,000? Yeah, nothing's really coming to mind. I mean, anything that pops into my head has already come up to everybody else's head. And so, you know, it's like, so then when people keep saying like, oh, do this thing and you're going to like, you'll get rich or whatever. And it's like, okay, then we do the thing. And then it's like, and look, we made $200. And it's like, okay, granted, $200 helps, but we put like 80 hours into this.
Right.
So, you know, we put 80 hours. If I put 80 hours into being a software engineer, I would have pulled back gobs more money than $200. So, I mean, that's like what I used to earn in an hour, you know? And so it's kind of like, I'm having a really hard, I don't do any more software engineering. I'm powerfully obsessed with doing this. But it's kind of like, I like the idea that people would buy the Art Ludwig podcast. I thought like 1,000 people would. And I just basically thought, you know, then it's like fair. You know, people listen to 200 podcasts and then they buy two podcasts and then it just seems like it's respectful. The show is respected. But when only like 70 people bought it, then it's like kind of having a hard time feeling good about it. And I'm feeling weird. It's just, it's complicated and twisted and weird. So, yes, Jack's got a smart way of going about doing it. And I haven't quite figured it out for myself yet.
Well,
and it's not really about money, but if the money was there, that would at least seem like it would be less, it would be respectful towards me. And right now I feel like most people are just kind of, they're just consuming anything that happens upon their path and they kind of don't care what it is.
Well, here's an idea. I mean, I think Jack's mentioned this many times that the secret of his success, and those are my words, but he's, you know, my understanding is that the secret of his success is that it's a consistent daily, usually at the same time, experience that people rely on because of the consistency and integrate it into your life, and it really becomes like a part of your routine and really helps people cope, I think, with the day, and people are just doing all kinds of random things but putting it into their daily cycle. So I mean, let's just say you de-emphasized and slowed down the podcast for a while, and then once you got your land going, you're like, it's like Paul Wheaton's kicking ass on the land hour check-in everyday thing with Adrian, like doing all the back-end work to like crank it out. And so everyone's just like on the edge of their seats. The people who don't find it dull, you know what I mean? That I think there are a lot of. I mean, hey, this is like a huge moment to anticipate. I think this is going to be, I think the site that you develop will be like the most historical site in the history since 1492, the first one of the first really epic things that's going to like turn back the clock on the industrial mega machine and all the toxic gick. And you know, I think it's exciting. So I mean, let's say you're you know fully moving ahead with developing the land, would you have a budget to like just brain fart out like half an hour or an hour of like updates on just what you're doing? I mean, not like interviewing people and all the overhead that comes and, like you said, chasing people around and, you know, even having to sit down and review things or you know, any of that stuff, but just like a from ground zero, this is Paul and here's what I'm doing today, and you know, hope you learn something from it, but I'm just doing this to like do a captain's log, you know what I mean, a captain's log podcast from the Karameterhof 2 or something, you know.
Well, I'm not sure if I would follow that kind of format. I do know that Jack believes that it should go out very regularly. And at the same time, Jack's primary thing is the podcast, whereas my primary thing, I put a lot more focus on the forums and then on my videos and articles. I can see that, but like at the moment, I have ideas for probably 250 more podcasts that I want to do. I get mixed feedback, but it's like there's probably about 40 videos that need to be reviewed, and I know that people find those to be the worst ones. It seems like that's the least popular. But the other thing is that when I've got like 1,500 things to do, and I know that people are going to hear that number 1,500 and think that no one has 1,500 things to do, but I could literally make a list of 1,500 items. And literally, I want to use the word literally here, 1,500. And it's kind of like there's this, everything tends to take a back seat because it's like it's got to be a really awesome thing to make the top 20 out of a list of 1,500. One of the things I really like doing is the book review ones, where we read 20 pages or so, and then we review the 20 pages.
Those are great.
I like making those. I think those are, I'm not even a podcast consumer, so I have a hard time judging it, but I kind of can't help but think that those are the ones that are going to be of the greatest value. Here's a book, which you cannot get as an audiobook. And yet it's packed full of information that's just so important.
Yep.
And so then this is a way to convey a lot of the information that's so important to convey, and at the same time inspire you to go buy the book. And read it and at least be tasted up for it. Or at least look at the pictures. there's got to be at least 50 books that we need to run through that process, and I've got like four that I'm currently working on, and it's like, and there's probably 10 podcasts in each book, so I mean there's 500 podcasts.
But that's, again, you're not making money, you're not getting paid by the podcast enterprise to put in all that work and effort, even though it's so valuable.
Buy land, then start having a daily journal. That's in a podcast form.
Captain's Log. And, you know, I'm actually looking at wethetrees.com right now, which is the permaculture, like, crowdfunding site, right? And I see permies.com banner here at the bottom. Are you What's your relationship with those guys?
They contacted me and said, we're starting up this new site. Will you sponsor us? You know, will you make a link to us? And I looked at their stuff, and I said, I think that this is a brilliant, brilliant thing. And normally, I do not like the idea of supporting somebody who's never been on my site before. Because I looked up their email. They had zero posts on my site. And on the other hand, I like what you're doing so much, I'm willing to support it. And so how about if you make a link back to me, and I'll give you a ton of banners. So if you look at Permies, and you hit the refresh button a bunch, or look at a bunch of different pages, at some point you'll see a We the Trees banner at the top of Permies. And so we've been giving them banner space for months now. And it's just, it's a zero money is exchanged. I just like their stuff that much, and they've made an extremely prominent link back to Permies.
Right. Well, I thought of it just now because I thought, well, what if you were to do a thing where it's like, okay, Pod People, if you want the Captain's Log daily report from Karameterhof 2 or whatever you're going to call it, then fork over the clams, and once I get to that, raise the thermometer on the the telethon to that line, then I will promise you that, and then that can be a way to see what gauge the interest before you invest the time or plan to invest the time. But I know I would really like to have to be connected, and I assume Jack's bringing Jeff Lawton over, this next year to do a whole design and install workshop, and I'm sure from there it's going to be, awesome reports from that whole that thing. So, I think there's got to be a way to get you, and I know you say it's not just about the money, but it is like to cover the cost. It's an opportunity cost. You're not doing other things that maybe could be making money or infecting more brains. But if there's a way to lock that in, I think I would really like to promote people supporting that.
I guess I just kind of feel a little bit like I would much rather do something where it's like if you're gonna try and do a Kickstarter like thing along those lines, rather than saying, Do a captain's log from the farm. I would think people would rather say, do a captain's log or do a 10-part book review of this book. Here's a new book, or here's a book that I wish was available as a book on CD, but it will never be that way. And so I found 100 other people, and we all want it. And so we're putting together a Kickstarter to have you review this one. It just seems like if you're going to, it's like, what would be even better is if somebody said, we're going to put together this Kickstarter, and then the money is going to be used to promote that book review when it's done. And because it's kind of like, for me, it's like this ongoing thing where I'm trying to do promotion without spending any money. Because, I don't have any, or any money I get, I try to set aside for the farm. Uh-huh. And it's kind of like, wow, what would be wild is if somebody who actually knew what they were doing with money and in promotion could go out and actually buy real promotion,
yeah.
Somehow infect. How do you infect a million brains with this? I mean, how would you get it into a million brains? Then there's the whole thing of like, how do we get the Hugelkultur article into 50 million brains? And there were a lot of people that put in a lot of really good ideas there, and of course a lot of the best ideas required like $1,000, and it's kind of like, and then it's a risk. You shell out the $1,000, and do you reach 1,000 people, 1,000,000 people, 4 people? And it's you just don't know. So it's a complicated thing. So for content, I think focusing on topics is better than Captain's Log. I can't help but think that some days on the farm are more interesting than others.
It's just going to be the sound of snoring in one day.
Well, and it's like, I don't. I'm not sure what would be of interest. And part of it is that I kind of feel like people are like, oh, I want to hear all your thoughts throughout the day, and it's kind of like a lot of the thoughts that I have throughout the day are so horribly boring, and it's like just before you called, to start this podcast, like 2 minutes before, I was thinking, okay. I'm going to try and get the more people to be able to find the rocket mass heater article, and I want people who have never heard of a rocket mass heater before, and so like what are some avenues that I might be able to get that in there? And it's like wood stoves, hundreds of little things every day. People sending me emails asking me questions that are already been answered on the forums. People sending me emails with tidbits of information that are interesting. And it's like, why are you sending this to me and not posting it on the forums? I mean, just the amount of email I get is tremendous. And then it's like, all right. Ben Lawson, we have been focusing on your question number 7. Far too long, my life is complicated and it's not glamorous. And frankly, I'm a little surprised that people are as interested as they are in it. I feel like I'm underqualified. But yet, I feel powerfully compelled. Maybe that's the only thing. I am underqualified. Other people are certainly more qualified than I am. Yet I'm this guy who seems to be willing to turn on a microphone and make a video and write an article,
and a whole lot more. So yeah, we can blast through these last few questions here super quick. And I it's an honor to just hear your woes, and I think I think you're like George Carlin. I mean, if George Carlin took a PDC. That would be you, because I think that the level of reach that George Carlin had in the culture while he was alive was tremendous, but he wasn't giving hands-on solutions to people, but he was entertaining the crap out of them, and I think I think you could do that. I mean, let's face it, permaculture's been around for how many decades now, and even, Jeff Lawton himself said that after his 1983 PDC, he thought by, I think it was 1990, that it would have been absolute world global policy, and it's not. And why is that? And what are the, what is defining the memes of the world? And it is the entertainment industry. It's the musicians, the rock stars, the TV shows, the reality TV shows. These are defining all of the tastes and attitudes and diets and consumption, habits of people all throughout the world. And so, I see really that it's going to, if you feel underqualified, you are over talented, and that talent, talent needs to be, cultivated and really applied. And what most people, like when you say people find you offensive, it's like, oh, you're that's just too much presence for them to be standing before, and it's like overwhelming to them. But if they were like back on their couch and they were able to just suck it up through a screen and be able to laugh about it and not feel the impact, then they probably would. I think that can be a huge niche is just the delivery of the humor and the entertainment value. So, who knows what'll happen, but I'm glad that we went through that question, and we'll just have to see what
comes up. Well, you hit the nail on the head when you said the thing about Jeff Lott. He takes the PDC and he thinks in 7 years, this information about permaculture is going to be in the brain pan of everybody, everywhere. It's going to be common knowledge, and because it is just that good. And so then there was a point in time when I basically kind of thought the exact same thing, but then at the same time I'm thinking like, well, it's been around so long. Why has it not become common knowledge? And that's where I got obsessed. And I kind of was looking around, and I was thinking, like, okay, there's two magazines. And so this is like, I'm thinking about 2005. I've taken my PDC, and then a series of events. And so then, like, one of the first things I did, like, immediately after taking the PDC, is I wrote the Hugel Culture article, because there wasn't one. And so it's like, here's the reason why this stuff isn't being adopted, is because there isn't an article for it. I mean, there are a lot of sites that say permaculture, and they say permaculture is good, and permaculture has these 12 principles, but it's like, I kind of felt like, no, people need the grit. They need the details. Right. And so then they need all of the little items. And so Hugel culture is one thing out of a list of 1,000 things that make up permaculture, and there is no Hugel culture article anywhere. And so then I wrote the first Hugel culture article and put it up on the internet. And so I just kind of had this feeling of like, and granted, like the magazines that were out did put out little tidbits of things, but people wouldn't pick up the magazine until they already knew about
permaculture. Right.
You know, and it's like, okay, I'm looking at this, you know, bunch of magazines on the shelf here. There's one that has a word on it that I've never heard about before. So I'm going to skip past that one. In the meantime, here's Scientific American and Popular Science, and you know, here's one called Countryside. Well, I know what country is, and I know, you know, and so then so basically they're skipping past it. And
right. Well, that's basic SEO like logic, right? I mean, you're familiar with that, with how the SEO stuff works. It's like, if you wanted to put a big fishnet out, and you know, there's the whole long tail thing. It's like, if you were to do, you know, spend some time on the Google, you know, keywords tool, you could find what in the agricultural and horticultural space are the biggest, you know, trafficked search terms, you know, in any given period of time anywhere in the world. And if you were to build articles that are studded with those keywords and have them obviously be embedded within your permaculture resource empire, which is richsoil.com, you know, where your articles are, you know, you could. And that seems like I think, as far as I understand, the lawn care article is so
right,
prolific, because it targets what people are already looking for and already interested in, and then they bump into the plethora of solutions that is permaculture on richsoil.com.
Right, right. And when I made the very first podcast, that was one of the things I said, okay, to, you know, to listen, if you listen to this podcast, then you owe me, and you now need to make a link to my lawn care article. And it's like, I kind of got the feeling that nobody was doing that. So I kind of stopped, you know, asking for it. But, you know, it's like today, it's like, make a link to my article on the heat bubble stuff, the 87% article with the Anchortex heat bubble. But, you know, that would be great if people did it, but I think they're just not going to do it. But the key is that at some point in time, it kind of became clear to me that in order to be able, I mean, for a while there, I spent about 6 months saying, hey, you guys ought to do this thing, and hey, you guys ought to do this thing, and I'm trying to explain to them how to do it, and they kind of brushed me off. And so then it became clear to me that if the world is going to change and become aware of permaculture, I have to do it. And I am obsessed in that space. And it turns out that I left the farm on Mount Spokane. And it's like, ever since I left the farm in Mount Spokane, now granted, I wrote some articles while I was on the farm in Mount Spokane, but really, after I left the farm in Mount Spokane, that's when I really started to do all this stuff. And then I've you know, been building the empire and infecting brains. And so, yeah. But that's, it's like, this is the important thing, that this information has to get out there. And at this point in time, I have been getting a lot of feedback of, you can't believe anything Paul Wheaton says, because after all, he doesn't even own land. And frankly, I think that that's a valid complaint. And so, you know, I do think people shouldn't believe a damn thing I say because I'm not currently doing it. And I do feel like, I mean, there's some, we were out of some property, and I'm trying to point out that this, what kind of conifer tree this is, and it's a bull pine, also known as, and I couldn't remember the other words, their names for the tree. And it's like, I've been out of the loop that much. Ponderous pine. And so it's kind of like, it's maddening. And I do, I feel horribly underqualified, but at the same time, it's kind of like, I still need to do this. I have to get the word out. I have to do this stuff.
Well, you're the Duke of Permaculture. You have high level diplomatic missions, and I mean, I the way I see what you're doing is to be very respected. You are going out and sampling all of the different successes and failures, so that you have the most robust and current, like, appropriate sort of discerning map, like, of the possibilities, you know, to be able to, when you are going to do it, you're going to eliminate a whole lot of wasted time and be just totally steeped in what's working and have so many stories. I mean, it's an anthropological thing. You're sampling, you know, the field work of all these other experiments and bringing that together. And I think it's extremely valuable. I don't think that you should be faulted for not having land yourself, because if you did have land yourself, you would be stuck into your idiosyncratic world of, like, the predators you're dealing with, the soil type you're dealing with, and then you would lose that perspective on a meta. You've got a meta perspective from doing the traveling and interviewing and reviewing the materials and staying engaged at that meta level. And I don't, you know, I mean, you'll catch up to the having your own site thing, but it will also take time away from obviously what you're doing, the podcast being one of them, but everything else too. But, you know, I think it'll be great if you can make your land experience and project feedback in numerous media channels, articles, podcasts, videos, other production companies coming to, like, maybe they're particularly interested in one thing that you are going to do, and they will finance the project of you doing it just so they can film it. You know what I mean? Like, that's the whole thing. Hey, you want to make a documentary on this one technology? Well, here's how much we need. And we'll, like you said, like with your videos, you know, you can pay to have one of these projects done ahead of schedule or prioritized. You know, if it's something, I mean, I like to see you do something before I try to do it. I'll tell you that much.
Well, I hope I don't lose the meta thing, but at the same time, I do dodge. I mean, any kind of warm season stuff, I just say, talk to Jeff Lawton. not warm season, but warm climate, warmer climate stuff, like tropical and subtropical, and I don't put very much attention into that, and so I'm already kind of, you know, not being very meta in that respect. On the other hand, I've got so many things that I just simply need to prove, and I came so close. It was closing day. We showed up to buy that property on closing day, and they had changed the document. The closing documents were not the documents that were agreed upon. And yet, if we had closed and we'd bought that land, I wanted to announce it over my daily-ish email, and I just kind of had this hope that when that day arrived, that there would have been like 50 people that would have showed up, and it's like, now let's make this shit happen. And it would have, I just, you know, and maybe it's just nothing more than fantasy, but I've already had 50 people who have said that they will be there the day that it opens, the day that we have the land. And so, I'm just
make sure they have,
I've got this
$300 personal burial money and 6 months worth of food and water, so they don't get any freeloaders.
An aged person is going to be a human being, and so there's going to be all those kinds of things. But of course, in my optimal vision there, I just kind of had this idea of like, and we're going to get a couple of Wafati's belt, and we're going to do all these things, and it's like, you know, it's all going to happen. And I even had, with the terms that I laid out, I had enough money set aside so that we could, you know, rent a Traco and buy materials and things like that. But it's like, it's going to be hard work, and it's going to be long days. I gotta prove it can be done. I mean, there's the Wafati project. There's growing lemon trees in Montana outdoors. There's, all of these things that SEP has done. And then all of the things, I mean, the Wafati freezer, there's just so many things that just need to be proven. So, anyway, this is a continuation of your asking about me having a television show like Beekman's World, and it's kind of like it's so complicated. And yes, it would be great if there was somebody who could make it happen, take charge, see to it that it happened, and then at the same time we can get everything else to happen also. That would be wonderful. And I think it's fair to be able to say it into a podcast that yes, these would be great things to have. And there are recognized challenges. I'm open to the idea of doing stuff. As much as you and I might think that it might be fun for me to have a show, whoever puts on the show, they've got to have advertisers that are willing to pay for it. Oh, and then you made the George Carlin reference. That's an awesome reference. I like being compared to him. I think he is a fun guy. And it's like, I've thought about that, like, oh, because I had, I don't know how many people, you should do a comedy thing and go and do a comedy whatever. And it's kind of like, I've never tried. Actually, you know what? One time in high school, they have, I was on the speech team.
Oh, really?
In high school. And they have one called After Dinner Speaking, which is basically like, you know, comedy. And I sucked at it. I was terrible. I was absolutely, because I couldn't remember all the stuff that I, because it's like when I'm speaking in front of groups now, and I've done so much speaking throughout my adult life. I make it up as I go. There's no script. But then they required it to be a memorized thing, and I couldn't memorize worth a damn. And so I couldn't remember what came next, what line came next. So I couldn't do it. I won other stuff where I was reading other people's things, but where you're reading it, you're like looking at it. I could do that. But I never could memorize something. It was awful. So when I do presentations, I've got the slides, and I can just that reminds me of what I'm going to talk about here, and I just talk about it. I don't have a memorized script. And George Carlin clearly wrote all that material, and then he said it the way that he wrote it because he memorized it,
right?
And so it's like, I can't do that, but that would be awesome if I could, and then I could try that. But and then even that's building a career from, you start off at like little clubs and stuff and work your way up, and it's like right now I'm reaching millions of people, and I need to get it to be bigger millions, and so I'm on my path now.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't say that you'd want to start like doing it, more. My point about George Carlin is that like it's the effect that your sense of humor and your delivery has is as marketable as George Carlin, and I think as magnetic or as like. Yeah, I mean, you don't, I'm not saying you would want to go and start a career as a comedian. It's more a side effect of you making fun of the reality that we live in and how many points to poke fun at the absurdity of modern existence that there are. Once you get the permaculture package downloaded into your brain, then Life becomes very grim, yes, but it also becomes very comical because of how absurd the poor design of the entire thing is. And I think, you know, Bill Mullis and everything that I've consumed from his you know, archive of his video work and whatnot is that he doesn't seem to be bored. He seems to have quite a jolly time just constantly tearing to shreds the absurdity of this of how things are set up. And I mean, the ability to have that delivery and not come across as a plant nerd, you know what I mean? Because a lot of permies are that, like science nerd or hippies, you know, just whatever. They just don't have that ability to take the information and make people laugh around the information and open their heart that way and get them engaged. And, you know, they're great. Like Warren Brush is a great storyteller, and that is a talent, you know, a social interactive talent that is very attractive and very magnetizing and really lights people up and gets them excited and imagining things. And so, yeah, you know, I think we've definitely covered this whole thing, and it's good to, yeah, just.
Well, you said plant nerds, and I got to tell you that when I encounter plant nerds, then they're like the people that are the most impressive to me, and it's like, I mean, the fact that they've memorized all the scientific names and it's like, oh yeah, if you're going to grow this thing, you need to scratch the seed and you need to like do this thing and then it'll, you know, do this. And then, I don't know. It's just always this massively, I'm just so impressed. And yet somehow botany is something that's like, just, it won't stick to the inside of my brain.
I feel you on that, man. God bless all of the plant nerds. We would
so every time it, it's like I just drink in what the plant nerds have to say, and it's like, say it again. And I want to hear that. I want to, and then I feel deficient when they know so much and I can't seem to. Be able to digest that. I can't seem to be able to do it as well as they can. It's like they have talent and I don't. I wish I had their superpowers, you know. But I don't get it. And it's always like, you know, listening to Doug Bullock or Dave Bainline. That's who I always think of as like the guys that really have got it down. I'm always impressed.
This podcast will continue in part 3.
If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about how to promote stuff. Homesteading and permaculture all the time.